COVID-19 didn't so much create new issues for Central New Yorkers experiencing poverty, but instead exacerbated existing inequalities. That's according to a new community needs assessment produced by the local nonprofit Peace Inc. The report listed six areas to focus on, including nutrition, employment supports, and access. I spoke with Peace's Todd Gailey and Carolyn Brown about their call for systems-level changes, sharing data, and the focus areas they identified.
Some of them are kind of maybe obvious if people think of poverty and what you would need to give to people, but some of them, like home safety or trauma-informed youth and family development programs, might not be as obvious to someone who's not thinking about this all the time.
One term that's kind of thrown around a lot right now is trauma and trauma-informed interventions. Well, what does that mean, right? How can a family or how can a community activist or a politician who's not necessarily familiar with this term, how can they engage it? Because it's just communicated in this complicated way. Mm. Same thing with redlining, right? Redlining is a term that's continually used. If you asked half the people what redlining, they probably wouldn't be able to tell you what it is.
I would agree that shared vocabulary is so important. So there's so many people doing this work. So there's human service organizations, and we have one way of talking, but then there's healthcare providers, and there's government officials, and there's law enforcement. And if we could get everybody kind of moving in the right direction, I think we could see more progress.
That other term you mentioned, redlining, that people know it's bad, but they don't maybe know what it means in full. Can you talk a little bit about how it plays a role in your findings and in the Syracuse community?
So I first need to give credit really who came up and who did the research for this. So this is New York State Civil Liberties Union. So basically what they did was they drilled down and looked at the infection rates based upon zip codes. And they found that of the three out of four highest zip codes with the highest instances, they were locations that had red and yellow line districts. These locations within the city have been disadvantaged from the ability to, for instance, borrow loans, to get home investments. They're regions where business and business investment has been very low.
Yeah, I think also you can look at it from a wealth building perspective. So if there were whole neighborhoods where people couldn't get mortgages to buy a home, and we know that, you know, for large populations in the United States, home ownership is where they build their financial equity, then a whole host of communities were left out of that, leaving a little inheritance to their children, building equity in their home, moving to a more expensive home. That whole process, these neighborhoods were left out of.
Racial inequality and the COVID-19 pandemic, they all sort of intersect in a lot of ways. Do you hope that this document is a way to really explicitly say these aren't separate issues?
Absolutely. And I think what's interesting is we can take a very negative view of COVID-19 and of the racial matters and the equity issues that we're facing right now. And we should, like, we talk about that this is morally unacceptable. But I think the other point to this is to understand that in moments of crisis, there's also moments of opportunity.
I don't think that you always see organizations willing to share their findings as easily and as explicitly as you have. Why is that so important to you? I mean, this is obviously not the first project where you're doing this, like, very open data.
It's something we've been asking ourselves for years. I've been at Peace over 12 years, and I don't understand why human service agencies wouldn't share the information about the needs in the community. And I can't answer that question, but we knew that whatever we were going to put together, we wanted to be a tool that the whole community could use.
When reading through even just the press release and some parts of it, is the notion that this is not permanent. This is not like to be noted forever, that this is the state of what things are. What are your future plans? How often do you guys plan to check in and update? I mean, this is a lot of work to put together an assessment like this.
I don't necessarily want to rewrite the assessment every time, because there's real value in looking at it both in, as a historical document, I would argue. So I think the move for us, both to maintain our sanity, but also as a way of just kind of being pragmatic and keeping the energy up, is kind of like a one to two page white paper every month. And again, when we say white paper, that's, again, I don't even want to use that term, because that has a certain idea to it, right?
It is our hope that this assessment begins a larger conversation. We would hope that future updates would be from initiatives of people, in addition to peace, who are doing the work and say, here's the progress we made on food insecurity. Here's the progress we made on this particular social determinant of health. So that the updates wouldn't be just peace anymore, but there'd be a community initiative working on one or two of the topics in the report.
In your heads, when you guys sort of made this like list of six things that you want to deepen and really focus on in the community, what does that look like in a very physical way? Like, what are some of the programs that people can imagine when they hear about improving access or nutrition in the community? What are programs that work and that we should keep investing in?
So in terms of nutrition, one of the things that we started doing in COVID that we want to continue is home meal and home delivery services. So our senior nutrition program is typically a congregate system, wherein seniors would come and group in, you know, a community center and enjoy a meal together. Obviously, COVID-19 shut that down. But we're finding that the people who needed home delivery in COVID needed home delivery before COVID, right? And so that's the first thing. Second thing with nutrition and home delivery is it's not just seniors, it's single mothers who have trouble going to a grocery store because they don't have childcare. It's an issue of large families. It might be someone who's self-quarantined. Again, a holistic approach. When we're talking about nutrition here, we're talking about access. We're talking about transportation. We're talking about childcare. We're talking about employment, right? This is where the data comes out. We are really, really concerned about what's going to happen in the middle of August when the eviction moratoriums go away. And then also the moving away of the $600 a week supplements for unemployment. We really think that there's going to be a huge, we think it, to be blunt, is a ticking time bomb. So we're making sure that we reinvest resources to help those individuals who might be struggling to stay within their place. So that's something new for us.
That was Peace Inc.'s Community Engagement Manager Todd Gailey and Deputy Director Carolyn Brown. For more on this, including the full report, you can visit our website, wier.org.